To me, space is an opportunity to reimagine how we do everything. Because a lot of times here on Earth, we're kind of used to do things a certain way. And it's really hard for us to imagine how we could do things differently. So space for me is one time an opportunity to really be a part of the future. But the other, on the other hand, is also an opportunity to use space as a creative thinking tool.
Welcome to the Next M Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Shirin De Bruyn, and I'm joined now by Michal Sizo, an internationally acclaimed space architect, TEDx speaker, and mentor to academic institutions and creative tech companies. She's an active advocate for gender and human equality and promotes bold creative thinking and innovation in extreme conditions. Michal, great to have you on board the Next M Podcast. Let's play the future.
Hi, so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Michal, it sounds so fascinating and yet so far away for me. What is the job description of a space architect?
Well, my life is divided between with gravity and without gravity. So on Earth, with gravity, I specialize in skyscrapers and large-scale, gigantic projects. And in space, I'm a space architect. That means that I research, design, and create living environments for humans outside of Earth. That can be anywhere from spaceships to space stations to habitats on the moon or on Mars. And that's what I do. And then I take that back and bring those ideas and innovation back to Earth.
Wow, so exciting. For us humans, space is also kind of symbol of hope, right? That we're not alone, that there is much more out there. I once spoke to a friend who is an analog astronaut, and she told me that she would like to go to the moon to see the beauty of the Earth at a glance, to be able to tell everyone about it when she returns. What is your fascination with space?
Well, I'll tell you a secret.
Uh-huh.
I never was a fan of space.
Really?
I never watched sci-fi. I've never seen Star Wars. But when I discovered a competition, an architecture conceptual competition, to design a settlement on Mars, then I was hooked. It was about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, space is an opportunity to reimagine how we do everything. Because a lot of times here on Earth, we're kind of used to do things a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard for us to imagine how we could do things differently. So space for me is one time an opportunity to really be a part of the future. But the other, on the other hand, is also an opportunity to use space as a creative thinking tool to kind of disconnect from everything we know here on Earth and reimagine how can we do things.
Amy Webb, CEO of the Future Today Institute, presented her Emerging Tech Trend Report at the South by Southwest Festival in March. So you worked on it too, and in it you write about a boomerang effect, that progress in space will lead to progress on Earth. That sounds very interesting. Can you explain that?
Exactly. So it's really following up what I said before.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the expert piece for the space section in the report. And the boomerang effect means that we will be challenged when we think about designing in space. We will be challenged with extreme environments, and it will force us to create extreme innovation. And by doing that, it will help us to kind of evolve quicker back here on Earth. So we don't all know it, but we are using a lot of products that were originally designed for space. We're using products that were designed for astronauts. So in your pocket, maybe you mm-hmm. have a smartphone. In your smartphone, you have a mini camera. The mini cameras were designed for space. Anything that doesn't have cords, like headphones with cordless headphones
mm-hmm.
or wireless anything, was designed for space.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Velcro, mm-hmm. insoles for shoes. So many things were designed first for astronauts. And then people on Earth said, we can use that too. So really, the boomerang effect is kind of imagining what will happen or what we can create in space. And then bringing that innovation to create actual evolution back here on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Customer centricity is not only a central theme in the world of advertising and content, but also in space. So what specific human-centered design considerations do you have to take into account when designing space buildings and habitats that are critical to human health and well-being in space?
Well, that's a big, big, big question.
Yes.
I wonder how to start. So in space, space is very, very hard. Let's start with that. It's very hard to only do the basic things, to eat, to drink, to sleep. All these things we have to reimagine when we go to space. Now, so far, the majority of astronauts, and let's be clear, about 630 people have been to space so far. That's very little. And only about 11% of them have been women, for example. The temperature on the International Space Station is set to one temperature. Women usually need 1 degree higher in order to feel comfortable. But the temperature is set for the majority of astronauts that are usually still men. As we go into the future, more and more people, diverse people, will go into space. And we have to start thinking about designing for everybody. Another example is that only in 2021, they flew a toilet designed for female anatomy. Until then, the female astronauts had to train harder in order to use the restrooms. So a lot of that's just gender specific things, but we can imagine many, many things that different people will need in order for them to live their best lives. And that's the basis of human-centered design, meaning we put the person in the center, the human, no matter if they're men or women, and we understand that we can't design average, because average does not fit everybody. We have to really think about our future customers or future space travelers in this instance to design for them.
Wonderful. It's super interesting, right? Do you have more examples? I want to know more.
Many, many more examples.
give me one, two more.
In space.
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things that can happen in space because of the large amounts of radiation is something that is called space blindness. So there is a risk that the eyesight will get hurt in space. It has to do with pressure in the skull and on the eyeball. And the stations are not designed, or the spacecraft, or the future architecture is not necessarily designed for people who are blind. We have to think about that. What about people that have different types of body types, different heights?
Yes.
On the moon, everything weighs sixth compared to Earth. So people there will be jumping higher. We have if people with different weights will be jumping there. We have to think about a lot of things that different people may need, whether it's things to fit their body, things to fit their abilities, if they're blind, if they have all their limbs, if they are a leg amputee, if they have different types of needs, male, female, older people, younger people, everybody have different needs, and we want to live our best lives on Earth too, right? So we have to think about all those things. And there are many examples of things that are not being done right today in space, also on Earth, by the way, which is how I got to space architecture to begin with, because I realized that on Earth, we're not living our best lives because there is something that is called discrimination by design, which we are not always aware of. So to design for everybody doesn't mean to design one to fit everyone, but we really have to imagine who will be using our environments in space, and we want to design for them. We also have to think about younger people. So right now, the people that are working in the space industry are a certain age, and they are trying to create space to feel like home, quote unquote. But what is feeling like home? Because what will feel like home for me and for you will not feel like home for the people who will actually be using or going to space, which are children today.
Exactly.
They are born into the metaverse. Mm-hmm. So if we're talking about playing the future, it's for them. And for them, feeling like home is different than what would feel like home for us. So we have to remember that.
Interesting. Yes. And you have been working on gender and human equality for many, many years. So how can architecture and design create gender equity in space? And what can we learn from this on Earth? So we already had many examples for the space. Now we have to learn for the Earth.
Okay. So I was working as an architect of skyscrapers in New York City. I was the lead architect for an 80-story tower on Fifth Avenue, and I started to notice that I'm usually the only woman in the room. Mm-hmm. And I started to wonder if there is an impact of who is designing, who is paying, who is sponsoring, who are the clients and who are the architects. Is there a contact between or a connection between who they are and who they are designing for? And as I started to look into it, I learned that yes, there is. Our world is not designed for everyone. So if you think about the long lines outside women's bathrooms in public spaces, you know, like when you go to a concert and you know that if there'll be a break, there'll be a long line outside of the women's bathroom. The men's will be good. So we have to always remember that. Maybe we want to go out a few minutes early to catch a good place in the line. There's a very simple reason for that. Women take 2 to 3 times longer than men to use the bathrooms. The amount of bathroom stalls is by the building code. The building code all over the world does not take that into account. So women have to kind of live with that reality, which can be changed so easily if people that are in charge of the building code or developers or architects will be aware of that, that they just need more stalls because it's not fair. Why we are wasting time. Our life is short. And there are many more examples. For example, when you go to the supermarket, there are high shelves that a lot of people can't reach. So it's kind of discriminating against shorter people, not to mention even people on wheelchairs. There are many things, even speaking of wheelchairs, a lot of disabilities on Earth are a construct of our environment, right? So if everything was accessible for people on wheelchairs, they're not disabled to do anything. They are able, but in a different way. So we have to think about if there was a person on wheelchairs in the design team, will everything look different? If there will be more women in the design team, will it look different? If there were more women or more diverse people, people of color, sponsoring or ordering or developing big projects in space and on Earth, will things look different? And space is an opportunity because nothing is existing on space in space yet, except the station, the International Space Station, that has been there since the year 2000. We're now designing new. Everything will be new. We're designing more stations. We're designing spacecrafts. We're designing habitats on the moon, on Mars. It's our opportunity to think about all those things because now in the world of society, we are more aware of diversity. And if we will make the mistake and kind of like what we're seeing now in AI and in, ChatGPT and image generating applications like Midjourney, it's still pulling from a database that is biased. So we really have to be aware not to keep doing the same mistakes and exactly. rely on mm-hmm. that.
Exactly. Yeah. Let me step back for a moment. So do you think we will one day see advertising on an alien planet? And if so, what might it look like?
For sure. So let's make things clear in terms of timeline. Mm-hmm. So in the next 10 years, there will be space hotels. There will be space co-working areas. A lot of companies today are already launching research in space, from pharmaceuticals to medicine to optics, for even beer and alcohol is being made in space today and researched a lot of agriculture aspects. So we will start seeing kind of co-working spaces in space. We'll be seeing, as I said, space hotels. So these are the first places that will probably need advertising. And we'll also be starting to go through space when we want to get from point to point on Earth. Spaceships are the next generation of airplanes. If we'll go by spaceship, we can get to any point from any point to any point in the world within 30 to 60 minutes. And that's something, again, that will happen in the next 10 to 20 years. A lot of airports are now being transformed into spaceports. 44 new spaceports are being built today around the world, not just for going for passengers, but also to launch satellites and things to space. But that's part of our future. So a lot of us will probably be able to go to space, whether it's for half an hour or for a few days or for a few months in the next few decades.
Ah. Honestly, would you take a one-way ticket to Mars or any other planet?
Probably not in our lifetime. I think the beginning of Mars is kind of a one-way ticket, really. And also, not only that, the age will, the mortality rate will go down. People will probably not get to live over 40, the people that will be born on Mars. It'll be very, very hard in the beginning. But the moon, on the other hand... Moon is right here. It's 3 days to takes 3 days to go from Earth to the moon. I wouldn't be against that.
Okay, yeah. I would join, actually.
Yeah, come
on. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's play the future, right? So what innovative projects are you currently working on?
Well, so many.
Okay.
But we don't have time, so I won't mention my space tech startup. So as we said, a lot of things that are invented originally for astronauts are then being brought back to Earth to be used by everyone. So... now, in the new space era, where commercial companies and private companies and startups are kind of getting in the game of space technology, we can kind of reverse the timeline. We don't have to wait until we have a product in space in order to bring it on to Earth. We can make the idea for astronauts, create a product for astronauts, but first give it to people on Earth and then send it to space. So my company is called The Sleep, and we are creating a personalized sleeping environment for people everywhere. It's kind of like a pod that you can get into. It will know what you need, what will be your perfect, perfect atmosphere, your perfect temperature, your perfect sound, vibration, light, so you will be able to fall asleep easier. It will know how to or when to wake you up in the perfect moment, and you will be able to find it in your office for power naps, and then when you go to the airport, and then on the plane, and then in an autonomous vehicle, and when you will maybe want to go on a trip, you'll be able to take that pod with you. And it's kind of a plug and play. And it's designed for the most extreme environments of all in space. Extreme temperatures, extreme sounds and lights. So it will basically make you prepared to sleep in an area on Earth that is crowded, that is loud, that has light. It doesn't matter because you will be cocooned in the personalized sleeping environment. And that's exciting. And another thing exciting about that is that it will also be the first product ever to openly, on record, research and enable sexual activity in space. So until today, exclusive.
Now the hot topics come to table.
So until today, sex in space is taboo. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody's researching it on record, as far as we know, as the open public. And, you know, it's something that is a basic human need. It is very much connected to sleep. Healthy sexual life, sexual activity can help you sleep better or make your or enhance your sleep quality. So if we are planning to go to space and live in space or be in space for a few weeks or months,
years,
sex in space is very, very important. And it's time to start thinking about it and start researching it and start understanding it. And not only that, but from, again, an inclusive perspective. What would women need for healthy sex life? What would different people, love is love, you know, and there's so many people that may be going to space, and we need to make sure, because sex will happen if we want it or not, but we have to make sure it's safe. We have to make sure it's comfortable, because, you know, for example, how hard sex in space can be. So in the International Space Station, if everything is floating around, and in sex, if you are with another person, you want to stay close to them. But in the space station, if you touch the wall, you bounce back. It's physics, you know? So we have to hold you down. So our pod, that's part of what it does. It will hold you down in a comfortable and soft way to make sure that that can happen. Right now, it cannot happen. There are many, many challenges that have to do with sex, sexual activity, intimacy, privacy. Right now, you don't get much privacy on the International Space Station. There's a lot to be researched, not to mention everything that has to do with reproductive aspects, pregnancy in space. You know, there are a lot of, in the beginning, the first woman, the first American woman, Sally Ride, that went to space, she went only for 6 days. I think it was in the mid-80s. And the smartest people in the world, rocket scientists, actual rocket scientists, gave her 100 tampons for 6 days in space.
Okay.
Because they really didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
So since then, time has passed, mm-hmm. we progressed, but still the whole aspect of female anatomy, what happens to us, what we need, is not advanced enough. So yeah, so this is something that I am excited to be as a female founder and CEO, working on sexual and intimacy in space.
Very interesting perspectives and totally new ones for me thinking about it in space. So now comes our last question. Play the future. This is the motto of our podcast season. So we play the future of space with you now. What are the three most important insights from space architecture that you would give us people on Earth?
Well, in terms of space architecture, because, as I said, nothing exists in space right now, when we are designing in space, we're kind of designing the holy grail of sustainable, and not only that, regenerative architecture. So we have to create our own energy. We have to grow our own food. We have to recycle everything. And if we bring that to Earth, we can completely transform how we build and design environments and how we live in a much more, not only sustainable, but regenerative way. So I don't know if that was one or three, but but we can really learn about all those aspects when we bring back ideas from space architecture to Earth.
Thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us, Michal. And I wish you continued success in your mission.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, of course, for listening. And I hope you got at least as much valuable insight and inspiration from this episode as I did. Our motto is Play the Future. And with that comes a direct invitation to listen to more episodes of the Next M podcast. Bye-bye.